This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Todd is currently on vacation, which means I've got Chance with me. Welcome back, man.
Thank you. It's always good to be here and fun. It's been a while.
It has been a while, but I'm glad you're in on the debates because we'll get some different suggestions. I always hate being a foregone conclusion, but I'm glad that you're here so we'll get some different choices. Before we dive into the two debates for today, just a reminder for Hooked on Driving events next week on the West Coast, Sonoma Raceway is May 1st, Wednesday, May 1st. Also, May 2nd and 3rd, 2024 is Portland International Raceway. That is a two-day event. Very exciting. It's not often that we always get two-day events, so that is going to be a big one. And that is hosted by Dan and Tina Garber up in the Pacific Northwest. So really cool. HookedOnDriving.com to sign up for those. And keep your eye on the calendar for tracked events near you on the Hooked on Driving calendar. We will be traveling to our first of three Germany trips this year. Todd and I will be posting two podcasts from Germany and Belgium, the Ring and Spa. So that is our first trip with Hooked on Driving. 2 days on the Ring, 2 days on Spa. We'll be podcasting there. So it will sound different.
Yep.
So Chance comes over today and he's wearing his Ring shirt, his Nürburgring shirt that you've bought at the famous
Nürburgring
store. Most of the time people mispronounce it. Say, oh, you guys are going to Nuremberg. I'm like, nope, we're not going to Nuremberg. That's 5 hours in the other direction.
Wrong direction. Very different place. So we were out filming. It was during the Billion Dollar Highway shoot. We show up to the hotel one night and I'm wearing this shirt. It's got the track outline on it. All the corner names
all
are listed.
All the corner names, yeah.
And this group of motorcyclist guys are at the fire pit outside and they look over, see the shirt. It's like, hey, where'd you get that shirt? Like, I got it at the Nürburgring.
it kind of baked your noodle because you were just thinking, well, is it not completely obvious?
Get it online, I guess. But he kind of had this look on his face like, I don't understand. I was like, yeah, I got it at the Nürburgring. It's like, you've been to the Nürburgring? It's like, yes. Did you drive on it? Yes.
Hence the shirt.
The look on his face, like the gears were turning. It was just like, he couldn't fathom that, oh, you can actually go, like people actually go there and drive the Ring and you can get shirts and stuff. It was just a really funny story. Every time I wear this shirt, it always gets brought up, this really funny incident that we had.
We've still got an October trip that is currently on the home page, on the home carousel for HookedOnDriving.com. That's October 13th through the 17th, yet the second trip for Hooked on Driving. So if you have missed out, we welcome you for signups. We know it's a little bit in advance of this podcast, but that way it kind of helps you plan your year and you can start budgeting towards that. But that is 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the Ring. So it's a little bit shorter, a little bit less expensive, but we would love to have you sign up at HookedOnDriving.com.
So it's on the home carousel, so you can go drive on the carousel?
You can drive. That's a great point.
Sorry.
Drive
on
the carousel.
You set it up. I had to say it.
I did kind of set that up. And last bit of information here, Everyday Driver and Hooked on Driving are co-sponsoring the Tire Rack One Lap of America that begins May 4th, 2024. It runs through May 11th. Please look for our friends Solomon Rosenthal and Brian Humphreys. They are co-drivers. And Solomon's going to be doing live streaming from the pits of 8 tracks. And then, of course, transit in between. And we've got 85 cars. It's going to be quite an event. So look for that, One Lap of America. And there's also a YouTube page. That is youtube.com, official OLOA for all those live streams there.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Springtime is here, and good news, everyone. Ceramic liquid wax is now available. It's the most durable liquid wax Griot's has created to date. Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer renews faded trim. It's good for tires, too, and repels water, chemicals, dirt, and UV rays for weeks. Don't forget Foaming Glass Cleaner, that's new too, which is a professional strength formula for fast, streak-free cleaning. Finally, there's pre-measured car wash pods, so you get the right amount of soap when you use a hose and bucket. It works with foaming cannons and foaming sprayers too.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Let's jump into the debates for today. Milan P. writes to us, trying to decide whether he should save for the future or spend all the money right now. And buddy, you wrote to the wrong podcast if you thought you should just put your money away. I'm kidding. But no, Jance, I'm really glad you're here to dive into this. Well, Milan's about to graduate as a mechanical engineer at the age of 26. He's single, so no need to worry about a family car for a few more years. In the past, he said he lost one of the best cars made in recent times. Those are throwdown words. That's a heavy statement here, Milan. You lost one of the best cars made in recent times. The Mark 7 GTI two-door manual. He took good care of it. It never disappointed on dynamics. And he says, you know all the reasons why it's great. And he took it autocrossing a couple times. He loved it. Good tires and brakes just transformed it. But here he is. He's got plenty of automotive and engineering manufacturing skills between being a mechanic and a longtime FSAE member. So working on a car is not a problem, or even building one. But he's admitting his love for a track car, wanting a track car. Milan, if only you knew some people who had an HPDE organization to take your track car to. If only.
Might see him at an event nearby him.
I'm hoping so. He says maybe a sole race car that gets towed to the track. And him and his buddies have talked about building one with their combined experiences. And he's got the itch, and he needs to cure that itch.
Is there a cream for that?
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping never. Yeah, it's bearing grease or something.
Right. That could be a cream you smear on your face.
Yeah.
He says he could probably afford $20,000 used, maybe $30,000 new. New cars just have better loan rates was the difference for his.
They do. That's where we're at this point in time.
As you kind of imagine, he says he's a sucker for two-door manuals. He likes the BMW 2 Series. Kind of wants maybe a rear-wheel drive two-door coupe experience.
Which is good. We recommend that. We like that.
He's also really wants something reliable and fun daily until he can afford something more. He said if he can't find
That's everybody, Milan.
Yeah, we're all in
that. I want a reliable daily until I can afford something more.
Yeah. If he can't find that, then a grandpa car is the only other alternative, which I thought is a really funny statement to say.
What is a grandpa car? What is the definition?
Well, he goes on and says his brother recently bought a Toyota Crown. I don't know if that's really a grandpa car necessarily.
I mean, there's young grandpas and there's old grandpas, and we all have the image painted in our minds, but.
Yeah, Toyota Avalons or things, I guess.
Hopefully the Crown is not taking
Cadillac Eldorado
place of the Avalon. Oh my gosh.
It says he wants to just be happy with his choices and set him up for the future to have a good collection of everything.
Yeah. So Milan is saying, does he buy a beater race car and a beater daily? He'd be putting himself in a tough situation here. I believe that you mean financially tough.
Yeah, that's my assumption.
And you don't say, Milan. I'm scrolling through your email here. I'm looking at why that Mark 7 GTI is no longer in your life. You didn't explain that there's no...
Yeah, it could have broke. It could have crashed.
We don't know. So we're just going to think, okay, it's exited your life for blank reason. You also didn't indicate that if you wanted another one because you have a fondness for it. You said it's the best car in modern times. Let's start out. What's wrong with getting another one? If it was taken from you, maybe you're not done with it. We always recommend it's okay to have another one. Todd had a second 300ZX. I've had a second 928. Bit of a regretful decision there, but not quite. Anyway, I'm just wondering. And we don't quite know why that's off the table right now.
Yeah, I've got a couple takes here. The first thing, I think you're about to graduate, which is awesome. Graduating college is a huge step. Congratulations on that.
For sure.
My thing is here, you're talking about maybe holding onto the car for a year. So if you're going to go that route, why not just get something affordable that doesn't break your budget? That's kind of more of a hold me over car. Because if you're going to graduate in the next year or so, your financial situation is going to change pretty drastically, I would think, once you get your real career job.
Yeah, kind of let's hope.
Sort of thing, right?
Let's hope.
So why not get something like, a Mazda 3 or a Honda Civic, just a normal, they're not awesome cars, but they're still pretty good. You can have some fun with them, but they'll be reliable, good on gas, and not break your bank. However, that's not really why you wrote to us, is it?
See, you're picking up on my thinking here. I like this.
Right. So I've got three choices, I think, that might fit the bill, at least for now, until your budget grows and you can get something that you would actually want to track. Kind of keeping it along the lines of sticking with newer things like the Veloster N you can get between 20 and 30 grand.
For sure. That's good.
It's right up there with the GTI that you loved so much.
I would say that car rivals a GTI in every dynamic sense.
I personally like them more.
I do too.
I think they're more fun, more rowdy.
I think there's more character.
The second choice I had is the last generation Honda Civic Si. It's lightweight. It's fun. It's a pretty chuckable little car.
You're talking about the prior gen mm-hmm. Si?
Yeah, not okay. The current one, the last one. You can get those in the 20s.
You can.
You can get two-door coupe versions of the Si. You couldn't with the Type R, but you can get that little two-door fastback shape thing.
Good point.
So that'll fit your two-door coupe desires, but it's still front-wheel drive. But if you're wanting a cheap, affordable track car, I mean, Miata is, of course, the answer, but why not get something like one of the earlier 86 twins? You can daily it. You can drive it around town, mm-hmm. all weather. They're great on track. Whatever you do, don't supercharge it if you plan on tracking it.
Whatever you do, Milan, don't supercharge it.
That invites other problems. They're still fun when they're supercharged.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But you can get those all day long within your budget for newer, older, with mods, without mods. Take your pick.
Those are good choices. I'm going to pick up right there with the 86. We have discussed that for a long time, Milan, and you have this situation where you want eventually a track car to work on with your buddies or turn something into a track car. What about the path of buying something now that is reliable and is unmodified with an eye towards keeping it, and then that becomes eventually the track car with your friends? You guys attack it and throw out the entire interior and put seats in it and the whole deal. The 86, whether new or old, the first or second generation, that is the car to do that with. I would say the first gen, because there's probably so many parts. You'll pay less for it now. Just drive it normally. And then eventually you'll get tired of it, or you'll want to start turning that into a track car. And then you can invite all your friends to buy the race parts to screw onto it. You will provide the car. They can provide the parts. Everybody wrenches on it together, and then it's something you guys could share.
Yeah.
But then at that point, maybe you mentioned in your last paragraph here, you're going to be a starting level engineer. So modest pay, but I would think you'll start to work up, and then maybe you'll want something like not a grandpa car, but something that is more daily, comfortable, you know, still enthusiastic, but doesn't have to be the track car because you've already got it. You kind of moved on. It was like the hand-me-down track car kind of thing. Maybe you keep it. Maybe you keep that 86 and then everybody starts wrenching on it and you buy the parts and you are the race team owner, I guess.
So you own principal?
You're the team principal of this small race team. Shoot, just make it track worthy. Bring it to a Hooked on Driving event and see how you do. Start working up your skills. And it's not about screwing parts to it first, whatever it is, because everybody thinks, oh, I got to turn it into a track car and I need to just go down the checklist.
Yeah.
We recommend driver upgrade as the starting point.
Absolutely.
We always have. That was way prior to HOD being in our lives, but we've always recommended getting better as a driver. So once you have that, then you could look at something that is very daily friendly, but still fun and sporty. I like your 2 Series idea. I had the current generation Civic Si on my list, even though I do like yours because it is a coupe. I liked your suggestion about the last gen because you can save money, but I always hated the rev hang on that car. That was the 10th gen mm-hmm. Civic Si.
That's true.
Started at about $25,000, and it was that Honda rev hang. It wasn't as bad as the Volkswagen rev hang, but still, it's noticeable and it's kind of annoying for enthusiasts. So it just seemed to be more sorted and solved for the 11th generation Civic Si. Unfortunately, you can't get the 2-door, but you know, it's a usable car and it's still very fun. So you've got a lot of choices here. Chance, I like yours. You've got some shopping to do, Milan, and you've got some decision-making, but ultimately I do think you need to first focus on something that isn't a track car, that isn't for racing. It's not for tracking. It's just something you're going to enjoy dailying. And you've got so many hatch options. You could have another GTI. I love the Veloster N idea. I love your 2 Series idea, Milan. I love the Civic Si. Those are kind of the sweet spot for your budget right now. Could look at Hyundais and that kind of thing, but I just don't want to be a foregone conclusion. You've got to find something that brings that fun that you love that you discovered in the GTI. So You've got shopping
to do. I suppose if you wanted to go straight to a track car, you could get something like an early Boxster and do what we did with Lemons.
Take all your money and dump it into the car.
Yeah, then all your budget's going to that. And then what are you driving for your day-to-day car? You're not going to drive that.
I like the idea of Milan becoming the team principal.
Yeah.
It's never ending, Milan. Wishing you well with your search. Let us know what you get. Write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, for all your Topic Tuesdays, car conclusions, and your car debates.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Quinn H. writes to us from Charlotte, North Carolina. He is looking to replace his 2017 Focus RS he purchased right after graduating college. Maybe a Focus RS might be the right car for Milan too. Who knows?
Ooh, you could buy Quinn's car.
Could buy Quinn's car, yeah. It does have almost 100,000 miles on it and several mods done to it. It is extremely fun to drive. He's looking to replace it with something a bit more mature. His budget is around $50,000, looking for a used car with less than 50,000 miles. He's envisioning something probably more in the luxury sports sedan coupe class, but he's open to SUVs as well. He loves taking the RS on back roads and road trips across the country and test it in all kinds of conditions, but he's not sure his dates appreciate the car in the ride quality that it has these days. To that I say, I have a pretty rough riding 911. It's loud, it's got a very racy suspension on it and things.
Yes, it does.
My wife loves it. One of our first dates we went on, I took her out on a Canyon drive in it. She'd never been on a drive like that so much before. And she texted me a couple hours later. She's like, "You've given me the disease. I have been infected."
Okay, so you've been now married for 2 years.
2 years. Today is actually my anniversary.
Happy anniversary, man. That is awesome. Does she still get that feeling in your 911? Even now? Or is it more like a special occasion, we're going out and she looks forward to it? Or is it she'd be willing to hop in or drive it herself?
Oh, she totally does. We took it out, 2 weekends ago? And she leaned over to me and said, "You're never allowed to sell this car."
Really?
She loves it that much. She's not really a sentimental type of person, but she's just like, "I have way too many good memories in this car that we're keeping it forever."
Okay, that changes things. Quinn, you've heard a good debate on the other side of that equation, even though I do understand, and it really kind of comes down to the person.
Yeah, and not every woman's going to appreciate cars like that, of course.
No,
but they are out there.
That's good news. Let's see. He's envisioning SUVs as well, because he's taken this RS on back roads, road trips across country, all kinds of conditions, and he's looking for class and power now, though. He works from home, so commuting is not an issue. He wants something that is appealing aesthetically, so he likes good style, a nice place to be, and will make him laugh on the occasion that he gets to punch the throttle. Now, his brother, who listens to the podcast, hello, Connor, he has suggested prior generations of the following cars: C63 AMG, the Giulia Quad, BMW M2 or M3 Competition, Audi RS3s, Cadillac ATS-Vs, the new Supra, and the X3 M.
Which is quite a list. He also says his brother, or he just bought a GLC 63 AMG, which is an amazing 5-seat
That is
SUV.
An insane little SUV. Yeah.
Big V8 awesome. In that thing. They're fast.
The problem here is Quinn says he would love a manual transmission, and he's never owned an automatic. His prior cars include a 1998 Mitsubishi Eclipse, which a buddy of mine had. Really liked that car.
I had a 97 for a while.
You did?
It was a 97 automatic non-turbo.
How come I never knew this?
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
All right. Well, Quinn's had an 05 Chevy Cobalt SS supercharged. He's had an 04 Acura RSX Type S, 2005 Infiniti G35 Coupe. And together, he and his brother own a Ducati 899 Panigale. His brother lets him drive his tuned 335i 6-speed. Your brother has some nice cars here,
Quinn.
Yeah,
he does.
All right, so he's also in Charlotte, so he has ways to scratch his fun vehicle itch if it means going automatic. Quinn, it sounds like you need something that is yours. I almost want you to have something that your brother wants to drive.
Yeah.
Because you want these two. You've got the GLC 63 and your brother has that 335i tuned. You want to drive those cars. But what if you got the car that your brother kind of looked over the fence and went, hey, what if we swapped cars?
Let's swap keys for the weekend. Yeah.
I mean, maybe you'd go for it, but maybe you'd like your new car so much that you'd be like, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go enjoy my own car.
Hang on to this and let you dream over it.
That's what I want for you, Quinn. All right. So where'd you land?
Well, he has such a good list from Connor already that I don't know that I can add a whole lot or really land on something definitive.
Good list.
But I came up with a couple of alternatives that aren't on the list, and two of them kind of surprised me that are within your budget.
Okay.
My wild card, I'll start with my wild card, the GT350, the Shelby GT350.
Do have a weak spot for that car.
Yeah, it's got the looks, but it's got the power that you're after.
Car.
It's not the nice interior you're after, although I don't think it's as bad as some people think it is. That would get the looks. It'd be a riot everywhere you go. You'll have fun. And
not as bad as you think.
So right. Going backwards through my list, kind of along the same lines, better looking, better interior is the Jaguar F-Type R.
Yeah.
Similar power, gorgeous car, much nicer interior.
Those are pretty, yes.
I don't want to say it's less interesting to drive, but it's not going to have the same kind of handling characteristics, but it'll still be a blast to drive everywhere you go with that big V8. And funnily enough, my other choice for you that I think might be the winner, you can get these if you stretch about $5,000, you can get the LC500. They start at 55 to 60. You can find them, several of them, on Auto Tempest. Yeah.
LC500
with the V8, not the hybrid.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
What years are we talking? Probably at least
the earlier ones.
4 or 5 years old?
Yeah. So they're not terribly old. And a wide range of miles. So some of them were under 50. Some of them were not. But LC500 for 55?
I'm not sure I'm going to do better than that. You could poke holes in that choice because it's not a manual.
It's not a manual, but it looks the way it looks. It's got an amazing interior for cruising around town and having, you know, the instant power you're wanting when you punch it. It's kind of a laugh in that way.
That's a good choice. And from a style perspective, you are wanting style. And I'm wondering, Quinn, if your dates are going to want to jump in the car with you, right?
If not, drive it.
If not, take the keys, you're right.
Like, I apologize. I did just realize two of my three choices are not manuals.
I mean, we have to put them out there because maybe you like the car enough and it makes you want to buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio is a great example. Not a manual, but what a car.
Yeah. They have a manual version in Europe.
Why did it bring here? So
I don't understand.
It's the market. If you can't make a business case for it, and nobody can say we're going to make at least X amount of sales based on estimates, it's not coming. So yes, the car exists. It's just not
here
for us. So
can you convert one?
Has anybody converted
one? Converted one?
I have not read anything.
I don't know.
It's probably more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, right.
At that point, you could buy a new LC500 or something, spend $100,000. Okay, well, you've got a really healthy budget, and I'm looking at that Audi RS3 because I think that's just such a sweet car. I like the M2s. I was thinking new M2, Quinn. I admit to kind of coming around.
You're going well over a Paul limiter, aren't you?
Well, see, if you just finance it, you'll never feel the final price. Right, you just
I don't think that's quite how that worked.
I know, but I'm just trying to justify somehow a new M2 because I admit to having come around on the styling a little bit because it is more of a track car look, and it was just a little bit too much when I first saw it, but I have warmed to it. And
I really like them in black, and I like them in, there's that red that come in that looks really good in red.
Wondering about the new M2. Could you stretch for the new M2? Otherwise, I do like the M2 competition, but I don't know that you would like it as much as the new one. The new one just does so many amazing things. It's too heavy, and it's, stylistically speaking, not for everyone.
No heavier than anything I listed. It's probably lighter than what I listed.
But you're right. I mean, that's how heavy cars are these days, and many of the cars that you've listed here, Quinn, are probably just about as heavy.
Yeah, true.
I do like that new Supra in there for you, but it is a smaller sports car. So
yeah. And I don't know that the interior is nice enough. It's fun to drive. It's really fun to drive, but it's a tight, crammed interior. Visibility is not awesome. I would love to have one.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Quinn, and I'm going to suggest a C8 Corvette, and you're going to laugh, and I can hear you laughing. I know it's above the budget, But every time I get in the show's Corvette, the one that we've got here, every time I get in it, I'm just thinking, it's just a fun car. It just works. Mm-hmm. People look at it. And I think the mid-engine thing is, well, I mean, this is a statement out on a limb. I think it's starting to change the age demographic perception of Corvettes. Because
yeah, I can see that.
More young people are gravitating to it. The dynamics are certainly completely different than the C7 or any front engine version. Yeah. I like it. I think it's a cool car. Now, it's not my beloved Porsches. It's not Caymans. It's not 911s. I lean towards for more hardcore driving and definitely more feedback. But your dates would like riding with you. It does have a lot of space for bags and cargo and that kind of thing. If you've never driven a C8, just at least give it a sideways glance. If it's not right for you, then it's not right for you. And I totally understand that. But the more I've driven this one, the more I just think, it's just a cool car. It's just a cool sports car. And it just attracts so many people from conversation. You know, and I want to push them like, hey, but it's not a GT4. I really want a GT4 Cayman. And people are going, what's that? I don't relate to that. But yeah. Corvette, I relate to. So is that the nice balance? And is a Corvette, a C8 Corvette, is that something your brother would look over and be like, nice car. Can I drive it? The big problem with it is price.
Price.
And it's not a manual.
Yeah. It is funny you mentioned the Corvette, though, because I did think about the C8 Corvette. It's like, can you get one? I don't know that you can get one anywhere close to your budget. That's kind of why I didn't bring it up.
No, but that's why I suggested it, so you didn't have to.
Thank you.
Quinn, you've got some great choices here. I am amazed that you actually found an LC.
Not just one, it was several. And
are these salvage titles?
No, clean titles, as far as I can tell. I didn't dig that deep, but there was a lot of them.
Okay, I guess maybe an LC is your next car. And see, then you can graduate towards something more hardcore. But if you want, just take your brother's 335 manual and go have a fun time with that one. Quinn, thank you so much for riding. Really appreciate it. Wish you happy hunting. We have lots of questions. Thank you guys for posting up. We post on Mondays and Thursdays for recording, and then those are coming out on Tuesdays and Fridays, as you know. And really appreciate it. I posted up a picture of the Polestar 2 and had to do a lot of explaining when we had this car for the last week. So I posted photos of that. And in Park City, the charging infrastructure just isn't good. The one I was parked at in these photos is max 50 kilowatt an hour charger. And that is the fastest in Summit County, unfortunately. Apparently Rocky Mountain Power is changing things, but I think we're still finding that EVs really depend on your region and depend on your charging situation, because around here it's either have something in your garage or fight everybody for the free charger.
I've actually been told that part of the problem with here in Park City is its proximity to Salt Lake and that a lot of the charging infrastructure around freeways anyway are more around where populations are and distances between places. So far enough apart that you can get from one to another, but not so far apart that you're not going to make it. So because of our proximity to downtown Salt Lake, it's only, what, half hour down the road from here, give or take?
Not that far, but
I can see why a lot of them haven't really shown up at, you know, we don't have any superchargers here yet.
No, and this is a refresh, which, you know, I was curious to drive it. We have not driven the Polestar 2 yet, and this is apparently the first full BEV car on a large scale. The Polestar 1 was the, I guess, the hybrid, but this is the first volume production car, BEV production car for Polestar. And I keep reading Financial Times reports where they say they've spun off Polestar at this point, and I can't really tell. I think Geely wanted to kind of divest themselves from Polestar, yet their hybrids and gas-powered cars are still Polestar engineered. And we do like it. It's definitely rooted in racing. I like the genesis of the Polestar brand, but I had to do a lot of explaining. Now, what is that? Is that the new Tesla?
No.
Well, I guess Tesla has put it out there that Teslas can kind of look like anything. So you're not wrong to ask. I mean, that's what is the Tesla styling element? What is the through line for Tesla cars? Anything?
Well, is Tesla going to become like tissues? Like, for blowing your nose? Is it going to be like calling them Kleenex? You know,
yes,
a lot of people say like Kleenex. Oh, is that a Tesla? Well, you're meaning an EV, not Tesla specifically.
You actually might be right, because every supercar is a Ferrari. Every personal watercraft is a jet ski.
Yeah.
All tissues are Kleenex. All EVs are just Teslas, right?
Right.
So you're not wrong.
So maybe that's their thinking. I don't know.
Maybe so. But yes, thank you for your questions. Let's dive right in.
Got kind of a two-part question here from our Discord, actually. Pininfarina Idealist and Mock Plane asked kind of racing themed questions for me. It said, if I've ever had a moment when photographing a race where you regretted seeing it through the camera and wished you had just witnessed it through your own eyes. That's the first question. And Mock Plains question is, what is the most beautiful race car you've ever photographed? So I'm going to kind of lump these into one answer.
Interesting.
Well, I got two answers, I guess, technically. Most beautiful race car I've ever photographed has to be the Griot's McLaren MP477, which was the 1992 Monaco Grand Prix winning car that Senna drove.
It's spectacular.
Which is, it was an amazing car. I'm making this a two-part answer because that car was shot statically. It was sitting still, and I was kind of crashing their own photo shoot that they put, they did for one of their catalog covers.
Right. They let us.
Yeah. They graciously let us take my own pictures, and they're amazing. I love them. Every time I see them, like, I just pinch myself. I can't believe I got to shoot that.
Yeah. True.
Cause it was flanked by one of the MSO McLaren Senna cars and the first MSO McLaren 675 LT, both of them in matching Marlboro colors.
Yes.
So it's a really cool trio.
It's gorgeous.
But as far as cars actually driving, I'd say that's the prettiest, but it was definitely the coolest. And you were there with me, actually. It was at the Historics at Laguna Seca.
That's right.
And we got to see Mika Häkkinen driving the 1995 Le Mans-winning McLaren F1 GTR around for a couple of hot laps.
That was pretty insane.
And it was one of those things where I was shooting, but also trying to just watch and take in at the same time. We both pulled our earplugs out just to experience that amazing V12. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
You're watching a legend, Mika Häkkinen. He's driving this car. Did he campaign that car at all later? That
wasn't. I don't think so. I could be wrong on that.
So I thought he went more into WC or sports car racing after his F1 career. And I don't actually remember if he campaigned that car.
I'm not sure his career, to be honest with you.
But it sort of doesn't matter. An incredible driver can just jump in and throw down on a, probably been to Laguna Seca before, but it's an unfamiliar track. I remember that. That was really cool. Let's see, on Instagram, Braptor is asking if the general public is misinformed about EVs. Since buying an EV, Braptor has fielded questions on how much gas it takes or what kind of maintenance the engine needs. Braptor feels like a lot of people don't grasp the benefits of EVs. And there are benefits of EVs, but there are drawbacks, as we've mentioned. It's kind of a mix, and it really kind of depends on what you want out of your car ownership experience. But I think for the most part, I mean, I think the general assumption is that mileage and range calculation that we always talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I know that ICE cars vary too. When they calculate the mileage and range available, well, you can go screw that up by jumping on the gas and driving fast and run it to red line, and you can screw up the computer's calculation to get worse gas mileage than it is calculating. You can easily do that, but there's never a one-to-one. There, it isn't even close with EVs. There isn't a single EV that I've driven that is a one-to-one or even close to, okay, I've driven about a mile and it sucked about 1 mile, 2 miles of range off my estimated percentage. It's more like 10 miles because there's always variables, which people driving ICE cars don't really think about. It doesn't really occur to you that, well, it's cold outside and you're just driving normally. You're easy on the gas and on ramps and you're just kind of puttering around.
Yeah.
It's all the same, right? And it's not. And I think that's the biggest misconception, not necessarily charging times or locations or, I guess, capacity. But you see manufacturers always advertising, we have 320 miles of range or 280 miles of range. No, you don't. And the public has that in their mind. And it is, I think, the single biggest selling point that people make their buying decisions about. Well, I will always get 320 miles of range. No, you won't.
Yeah. Well, to add to that, I kind of do, I don't have an EV, but my Mazda 3 I have, I've got a 2008 Mazda 3 manual sedan. It gets 30, 32 miles to the gallon. The range on it varies with your driving. It doesn't have...
Your experience will vary.
Yeah. But it doesn't have, on the trip computer, it only shows like your trip odometer. It doesn't, this car's old enough that it doesn't give me an estimated range.
Right. I mean, many modern ones do, and they desperately try to calculate what range you have left, and I can screw that up in a second.
Yeah. But I've been using it that I know, okay, I'm going to get about 300 miles on a full tank of gas. Sometimes I've gone up to almost 380 miles on a tank of gas. Sometimes it's been less than that, depending on how you're driving. So I've been using it as, okay, I know I'm going to get about this much. Now I'm going to start looking for a gas station instead of Well, it says
when
I'm going to go.
Comes on.
Yeah, instead of it says I can go 350. Well, I'm at 290, and I'm not. It says I've got 1% left. So instead of doing that kind of thing, I'm actually using it. So I know no matter how I drive, I'm going to get roughly this amount. If I get more, then great. But if not, then well.
But of course,
whatever.
It changes on a road trip. You're just cruising along for hours on end. The trip computer is sort of like, oh, your car is suddenly super efficient, and that's also not true.
And who's buying? Granted, you can fill up your gas tank in seconds comparatively. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But who's buying a gas powered car with the range in mind?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody
one's
cares.
Ever shopped that
nope.
way.
Well, since Todd is away, Chance has hockey questions and I have watch questions. So
this
thank you guys for picking up on that. See, I can talk at length about watches, and there's a great question here from Handsome Alex 25. And so what do I think about the traditional brands, Rolex, Tudor, Omega, Grand Seiko, and Breitling versus upstart micro brands like Zelos and Notice have caught his eye. What about me? I'm a big fan of Rolex, and I will just say that I never used to be. I always thought Rolex was for uninformed, upstart, new money. You don't really know what you're buying. And as soon as you get some money, you want to get a luxury watch and you just think, I'm going to go buy a Rolex.
Like Porsches in LA?
But exactly like Porsches in LA. You're 100% correct because there's plenty of enthusiasts that understand the history and pedigree of Porsche and buy it for those reasons. Hopefully I'm in that camp. Hopefully you're in that camp.
Right.
But there's also people who just want the shiny, fast, and it's got a Porsche badge, and so I'm just going to buy that. But it's not just Rolex and Porsche. It's with any luxury brand, any high-end brand. Well, that's what my parents had, or that's what my friend has, or that's all I know, and so you're going to gravitate towards that. But the more I've dug into the Rolex and Tudor brand, they're amazing watches. And so with the benefit with these larger brands, you've got a bigger company backing them, hopefully customer service is appropriate and good, but not all the time. But you're getting the benefit of very high-end on a large scale kinds of watchmaking, but that doesn't mean they're junk in any sense. It doesn't mean like the handcrafted artisanal watches are the only ones to buy, because usually those are pretty expensive too. So the Rolex and Tudor brand, I mean, Paul Newman wore Rolex. He had that famous Daytona forever and ever and wore it everywhere. It was so bashed and beat up and just amazing. And same with Omega, same Grand Seikos are amazing. They've really caught my eye. But I will dive into the new brands. There's a few that are very much on the high end, like Rex Happy. He runs Acrivia.com in Old Town Geneva. He is a young and upcoming watchmaker. Simon Brett, that's Simon Brett.com. And Jason Wilbur is in America. Wilburco.com. Those three brands are very much at the high end. And you'll appreciate them for their watchmaking skills. But then I've always admired Michael Kobold. I like Dan Henry watches. Check out Henry Archer watches in Denmark, Magret, and then Unimatic, Handsome Alex. Unimatic watches are actually, they're about $1,000. They look really great from a style perspective. I like those a lot. And I use wristcheck.com and Bob's watches for all my shopping. So when I'm doing the Auto Tempest .com/everyday shopping and just shopping for cars, I use these two
watch sites.
Those are my watch sites. But to answer your question the most, young people are taking over the established brands and they're bringing a new sensibility to brands that exist like Rolex and Omega and all these high-end brands. A great example is the Arnault family, the family of Bernard Arnault, who is the billionaire owner of LVMH. All of his kids run all of the brands.
Louis Vuitton.
Well, it's not just Louis Vuitton.
Not just, but that's...
Jean, the youngest, actually took over Louis Vuitton, and he's reintroduced the Tambour watch, which is really classy and very nice looking. There's the Tambour Horizon. I'm not into trendy things, but that new Horizon is actually really quite cool. Frederick runs the Tag Heuer, Hublot, and Zenith brands. I believe his other son, Alexander, is in charge of Dior. And his daughter is in charge of Tiffany's, I think. So anyway, they have a lot of the high-end luxury brands. But the point is, all these younger enthusiasts taking over the watch brands and leading them down the path of new sensibilities and not just making them the trendy kinds of old watchmaking and turning those into trendy objects, but bringing a fresh sensibility to the old established brands that already have that quality built in. That's what's exciting. But there are a lot of new watch brands that are trying to capitalize on that. And so I like that that Notice brand. I noticed that Matt Farah had a special edition with Notice watches, and that's on their website. You've ultimately, it comes down to style and what you can afford, but watches are so great because people notice it on your wrist and ask about it, and suddenly it's like-minded people about cars and watches and that kind of thing. So that's why I like them so much.
Well, I guess I'll jump into my non-car question real quick.
Do it.
Shadow Blue asks, what would I name the Utah's new NHL hockey team? So if you don't know, the Arizona Coyotes hockey team have been bought out and are moving to Utah. They're calling it the first of its kind transaction, where it's not a relocation, but it's not an expansion team. The Arizona Coyotes, I won't bore you with all the details, but they've had a lot of drama in the last few years, and specifically around arenas. They've been playing in a college arena that only holds about 4,600 people, which is tiny compared to most NHL facilities. So kind of as a stopgap, they were looking at building in a couple of the places. They've had problems finding somewhere to build a new arena. So the NHL has told them, look, if you can't build something, then you're going to have to move your team. And meanwhile, during all this happening, Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, has been, in the last 2 years, has been pushing to get an expansion team to Utah. So the way this deal is working is Utah is giving up their expansion team rights and trading it, in a manner of speaking, to Arizona. In return, they're getting all the players and the prospects and the draft picks and all the staff and that side of thing, while the Coyotes' name is staying back with the owner in Utah,
It's a weird transaction. I guess they're making it work, right?
Yeah, and the idea is if this guy in Arizona can get an arena built within 5 years, he'll be able to bring back the Coyotes team as a new team, an expansion team. It won't have the same players, but it'll have the same name, same logos, trademarks, that kind of stuff, branding. Whereas all the players have come up to Utah. And yesterday they actually had their launch party, their, I don't know what you really want to call it, the announcements, the
get the town excited
introduction
party.
Yeah, they filled the entire arena up. They turned away thousands of people at the door, introduced the team to everybody. It was really cool. I was there, and they were doing giveaways, and they had the players say things and it just addressed everybody. To answer your question though, for the team name, they don't have a name right now because the Coyote name is staying in Arizona.
Are they having a contest for naming or anything?
Kind of. They're actually going to do think of a playoff bracket. So they're going to have, they haven't said how many names, but they're going to allow the fans to vote on what they think the team names should be.
Okay.
So there's 8 names that have been submitted for trademarking. And so you figure a playoff bracket, it's about 8 teams. So you got 8 names. They're going to lay it out like that. We don't know if these names have actually come from the Utah NHL organization, or if they're someone trying to hold the names and sell them later if Utah wants the names. There's some rumors of that.
Crowdsourced like Bodie McBoatface sort of equivalents.
Yeah, or if they're trying to hold them up and say, you can't have these because we don't like them. I don't know. There's some rumors going around, floating around that. But they've all been submitted by the same LLC. So these are probably the names that we're going to be picking from. So we got the Mammoths, the Yetis, the Blizzard, HC, which stands for Hockey Club, more like, you know, football, soccer kind of team names.
The Mammoths.
The Mammoths, like, I guess, woolly mammoths, I'm guessing.
Okay.
The Venom, the Outlaws, Ice, which I think is the dumbest name ever.
That's not good.
The Ice have taken the ice. What? And the Fury. So my personal favorite is the Outlaws. If I was going to pick, I would pick the Outlaws. There is Outlaws connections to Utah with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid that was here in Utah.
Okay.
So we do have some outlaw heritage here of sorts. So okay. That's my pick.
At least it wasn't like seagulls. The seagull is Utah's state bird, for those of you who don't know. It was because of bringing the seagulls in to eat locusts or something in the 1800s, and it saved Utah or something, and so it's the state bird. Like
the California gull. Yeah.
The California gull just made no sense. And then we're the bees. It's always beehive, everything, the beehive state. The beehive, so I'm glad state. There were no names that were honey and
well, one of the early names was the swarm. People wanted the Utah swarm, like a swarm of bees. Like that's that kind of works. Going, I don't know that I love it, because then you can call the arena the hive.
Oh my gosh. Okay, moving on. Back anyway. To cars. On Facebook, Dieter Forrest said, on this week's episode of Bad Financial Decisions, you bought this Mercedes SLK 180 compressor for very cheap, with a bit of work, needs a bit of work. It's a silver SLK with red leather interior, but the exterior is silver. What color should Dieter get his car wrapped to match the red leather interior? I'm saying the current trend for Mercedes is that dark charcoal matte paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even though it's a shade of gray, the matte modernizes it and could very easily make that car a standout. So I'm suggesting either a very dark navy matte or a very dark charcoal matte finish for your new fun car. Even looks like even the steering wheel has some red tones on it too. But anyway, well bought. I love it.
Nice. The Bruce B said he saw the almost crash on our Camry drive the other day, which was horrifying to watch. Says, other than that, in the teens that were driving the Vet on American Original, what are some crazy things that we've had that we've unexpectedly captured on video while filming?
There's been a few.
But one of Todd's favorites, I think, is when we had the Vanderhall. He talks about the squirrel running out in front of him and, you know, hunkers down in the middle of the lane so it, you know, goes over the tires.
Oh, that's true.
And then the back tire nailed him anyway because three wheels.
One that really stands out, coming back to the LC 500, is when we drove the two yellow cars.
Mm-hmm.
Todd was driving, believe, the coupe. I thought we had an agreement with birds. Like, I thought the birds, like, they fly in front of cars and they're kind of crazy and sometimes they seem like kamikazes and they're...
Yeah.
But Todd actually got one. It flew in front of the LC 500 at speed. And
forgot about that.
If you haven't seen the front of an LC 500, it's an egg crate grill. It's like a strainer.
All the spindles.
And
yeah.
they're kind of sharp and it strained the bird through the grill and it hit the radiator inside. And I had to, the reason I know all this is because I had to pick it out because the car had right. to go back to the press fleet and I didn't really want them to have a strained poor bird that was just, yeah, it was pretty nasty. And,
we've had birds, we've had wildlife jump out. Todd has with the Vet, but we haven't hit any wildlife really, other than birds. You've hit some on windshields too.
I've gotten a lot of chipmunks and squirrels. I'm just going like, I thought we had a deal.
Sean F asks, mentioned on a different channel on our Discord the other day, but what are our favorite automotive OEM and non-OEM brand collaborations, such as Subaru and L.L. Bean, Fiat and Gucci, Ford and Eddie Bauer, etc. I actually came up with three. Two of them are ridiculous, and I'll ground it with another one that's also kind of ridiculous. There's two Lamborghini special editions that were kind of along these lines. There was a Lamborghini Diablo Alpine edition that was...
Okay.
They made 12 of them. They were in a gorgeous blue. They called it Alpine Blue because, of course, they did. But it was, the intention was to show what kind of electronics you can do to cars at that time. So they had built-in radar detectors and stereos and things like that in the car. I always kind of liked that one because it was a pretty car. They also did a Versace edition Murcielago. I don't know if you remember that. It was also a really special,
no.
It was you can only get them in black or white. And they had that crazy, you know, their upholstery design that they do, where it's that like zigzaggy shape. They had that all the interior. Yeah. It was kind of cool looking. But then the other one was the AMC Gremlin Levi edition. Remember those?
No.
There was a Levi edition Gremlin.
was?
Yeah. The seats, like the upholstery was actual denim from Levi. So you're sitting on your jeans and your jeans in a Gremlin.
Ugh. I'm so glad we left that behind. Jorge says, build him a GR, a Grammy. What does that look like? Sorry that, yes, SoCal tried to kill us repeatedly, but wow. The Grammy, I talked about this in the Camry review, wishing for the GR version of the Camry, and all I can come up with, Jorge, is the truck engine, the iForce Max engine that, I believe it's a 2.4 with all the power connected to an all-wheel drive system in the Camry. And I bet you that would fit just fine under the hood of a Camry because I don't know what other powertrain from Toyota to lean on. And it has to start with powertrain to build out from there. Because, of course, you can do brakes, suspension, and different styling on the car. And, of course, we would have to come with that. Maybe they could take that's the truck transmission out of the Tacoma. You wouldn't want that.
No.
You certainly wouldn't. I mean, I was thinking the super powertrain, but then you'd be building another car in Austria for Toyota, which you wouldn't. I don't think you'd want to do. So
BMW would go for it either.
Yeah. So I suppose it would have to, you'd have to tweak the automatic to make it shift like an Alpha with the automatic out of the Taco, use that powertrain, the 2.4 liter with the hybrid boost that would give you certainly enough power and a lot of torque. Would it translate to a car? I think it might. I mean, here's the deal. I think it's worth Toyota to put some money into testing this idea.
It would be interesting. I mean, they raced them in NASCAR.
Yeah, they did.
NASCAR Camrys.
They did. I think the NASCAR Camry was designed first, and then they designed the streetcar.
They probably did. Waffleophagus asks, excluding the Taos, what is the most pointless car you've ever driven?
Vanderhall's up there for me.
Yeah, I can see that. For me, it's the Mitsubishi Mirage.
Yeah, it's pretty pointless.
I rented one of those once off Turo. It was the cheapest thing on there.
I was going to say, on purpose?
Yeah, only because of the price. And then I drove it. It's like, I'm never driving one of these again.
Yeah.
More cars, please, asks, what is the most rant-inducing feature you've experienced in a car? For me, that would be every shoot we'd ever do. A car that's got the start-stop feature, you pull up to a light, engine shuts off.
Which is all of
that's
them.
The first button we usually go for.
Yeah.
The other one I don't like, I understand why it's there, but I really don't like it, is lane keep assist and the forward collision monitoring. Because lane keep assist, when it's turned on, it works great. Don't get me wrong. But I hate when I'm driving home, going through Provo Canyon, and you get too close to one of the lines, and the car jerks you back into your lane. It's like, no, I don't want it. It feels like the car's fighting you the whole time you're driving it, and I hate it. But then the forward collision monitoring, especially with Honda and Subaru, are my least favorite. They work amazing. Again, they're awesome what they do. But when it sees something in front of you, it automatically brakes for you. It pops up on your dash in big, huge orange letters, brake! And so what do you do?
If it doesn't do it for you in addition to that.
Yeah. So what do? Your eyes are now taken from off the road where you're looking down at the dash to see what the big orange thing says. And then you hit the car in front of you anyway.
I think what bugs me the most is the code that says a car should always be in the center of the lane at all times,
yeah.
Which just isn't true. You're not always centered in
no.
the lane.
Well, think about motorcycle driving. They don't ride in the middle of the road.
Agreed.
They ride on one side or the other.
Agreed. They split it into thirds. Good bike mm-hmm. riders split it into thirds and choose the appropriate third because you don't yeah. want to be on the center because of oil drips.
Right. Yeah. And sight lines.
And sight lines, for sure. Guys, thank you so much for all your questions. Looking forward to hearing from you. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com. Chance, thank you for joining. Really appreciate it. Nice having you on again. And as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Todd and I will be traveling on the first HOD trip to the Ring and Spa. So the podcast will sound different, but we're going to share our experiences. When we're there, the Everyday Driver Pilgrimage trip is full, but there is still one more trip to Germany and Belgium this year. Go to hookedondriving.com. So 2 days on Spa, 1 day on the Ring. We would love to have you sign up. Love to have you join us. We've been talking about it a lot. And if you've ever thought, you know what, I should go with the guys, now you can. We've got one more trip available. So looking forward to hearing from you. Really appreciate your questions. And we're looking forward to next time as always. Cheers, everyone.